Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network, and happy to have you with us today. We're going to begin by talking about the value of a liberal education. Tom Plager is the Dean and Campus Executive Officer and also an Associate Professor of Anthropology and Archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County. You may recall over the last few months we've been doing a series with Tom about Wisconsin's first residents, and today we'll ask him to put on another of his hats, the administrative side, to talk about the value of a liberal education. And Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Jim, great to be with you. Always a pleasure.
Let's start off with this definition of a liberal arts education, and how does it differ from a technical education?
Well, that's a good question. A liberal education is one that's really a philosophy of a very broad curriculum that empowers people, exposes them to a wide variety of disciplines, the humanities, the social sciences, and the sciences. And it's designed to develop critical thinking skills, communication skills, written and oral, and connectedness. And it's really the foundation for lifelong learning and the foundation for a major and virtually any major within the University of Wisconsin system. Where it differs from a technical education or technical training is that a liberal arts education or a liberal education is really about learning how to learn. It's not about understanding a particular trade or a particular technical training, but focuses on how to process information, assess information, and apply these skills that I talked about that really transcend any major in any career.
How does a liberal arts foundation then prepare students for this major or as the career, as you mentioned?
Well, again, and this is something that I see quite a bit here, students coming in and asking about, well, I'm interested in a particular major. Why do I need to take this first 60 credits of this liberal education? And again, the types of skills that are learned during the first 60 credits of a college degree of a liberal education are really the skills that will allow someone to pursue a major. These critical thinking skills, connectedness to see relationships between different disciplines, to process information, assess it, and understand the validity of certain types of information, the validity of an argument, what makes a sound argument. And it's more than just a set of particular courses, but these skills that are amassed by taking this broad curriculum over a two-year window.
If you'd like to join the conversation with Tom Plager, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. What is the Association of American Colleges and Universities Liberal Education and America's Promise or LEAP initiative?
Well, the AACU, or the Association of American Colleges and Universities, is this association of higher educational institutions across the country, and they are a strong promoter of a liberal education and recently have developed this initiative called LEAP, which is the Liberal Education for America's and America's Promise. And it's designed to develop greater awareness and connectivity to the liberal arts and explain why this education is so important in the economy that we're in now, particularly in a global economy where we need graduates who become excellent citizens, who are able to work in a variety of different environments and are very adaptable. And that's really what a liberal education is about. So this initiative is across the entire country as colleges and universities are working on their liberal arts curriculum and trying to promote and create a better understanding of why it's such an important foundation to a college career.
The University of Wisconsin is promoting liberal arts education, I would imagine, in the same way that the Association of American Colleges is.
It is. The initiative within the UW system is LEAP Wisconsin, and you can visit the University of Wisconsin system's website at http://liberaleducation.uwsa.edu. And if you go to that webpage, you'll see that the institutions within the University of Wisconsin system are all working at better promoting, better explaining, better connecting their liberal arts curriculum to their majors. On our own campus here at the University of Wisconsin, Baraboo Sauk County, one of the things that we've done is we have a mandatory required first-year experience where all the students, the incoming freshmen on campus or first-year students, take a course that exposes them to the university. And we really try to emphasize the importance of a liberal education and trying to explain and emphasize that the first 2 years of this education is more than just checking off a list of courses, but rather a set of skills that students need to develop that will make them successful for the next 2 years of college, but will also make them successful in their careers and will make them very productive citizens.
Tom Plager is the Dean and Campus Executive Officer and Associate Professor of Anthropology and Archaeology at the UW-Baraboo, Sauk County. If you'd like to join in, we have a couple lines open at 1-800-642-1234. And let's start off with Tim in Barrington, Illinois. Hello, Tim. What's on your mind?
Hello. I just wanted to say that I had a liberal arts undergraduate degree and then went back and got a master's degree in business. And what I found out, the last courses you take in an MBA program are these case study courses where they provide you with a load of information, and then you have to figure out what the problem is and what the strategy for addressing it is. What I found out was that the kids who had undergraduate business degrees, professional degrees, had no ability to critically read and figure out what the problem was. And I went from somebody who had very few technical skills to someone who could lead the discussion in class only because I knew how to read for my liberal arts degree.
Excellent point. And I hear this from employers. I hear this from graduate schools and students who have attended graduate school or gone on beyond the baccalaureate degree. And a liberal education really prepares you for this adaptable learning and allows you to assess information from a variety of sources and work with a wide group of people. So I appreciate that comment. That's exactly the message that we're trying to bring forward with how important the first component of a college degree, the liberal arts component, is to being successful. And in this case, it's no surprise to me to hear that you were able to excel beyond some of your cohort students who did not have that liberal arts background.
Tim, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And if you'd like to join in, the number for you is 800-642-1234. The University of Wisconsin-Baraboo, Sauk County, one of 13 two-year liberal arts college campuses within the UW system, compared to community colleges that people may be familiar with elsewhere, what type of institution is the UW-Baraboo, Sauk County?
Well, if you look around the country, the majority of two-year colleges that I think people are familiar with are community colleges, and the traditional definition or the traditional comprehensive community college is a place where you can go for training, technical training, or college transfer courses that may include a liberal arts program. Wisconsin is a different state in that early on in the creation of our higher ed system, the vocational technical training was separated and is part of the technical college system's mission, although today a number of campuses are providing some liberal arts education and several are providing a liberal arts program alongside of their technical training. The colleges, the UW colleges, which UW-Baraboo, Sauk County is one of 13, these 13 two-year campuses of the University of Wisconsin system are unique really in the United States. There are only two or three states that have a similar system where we have two-year colleges part of the state public higher ed system, the university system, that specialize only in liberal arts education. So students coming to us are getting UW professors who are specialists in the liberal arts or liberal education, the four credentials of the rest of the UW system, but are really the experts in teaching the first 2 years of a four-year liberal arts experience.
What is the primary degree that your campus offers?
We offer the Associate of Arts in Science degree, which is the University of Wisconsin System's liberal arts degree. Students that obtain that degree are able to transfer anywhere else in the system and in many cases transfer that degree on to many of the private colleges in the state. And we have agreements with a variety of institutions, including Beloit College, Northland, Lawrence, and so forth. But it's a degree that, when completed, students are done with their general education or liberal arts education. I really don't like that term general education because it somewhat devalues what the first 2 years are about. But students that complete that degree go on to the University of Wisconsin system and do very well. The system studies our students, and they complete in a relatively short time and are integrate well into the four-year UW campuses.
Tom Lee, the next caller is Cynthia in Lake Geneva. Hello, Cynthia.
Good morning. I wondered if your guest could comment on some of the models that are being proposed to both shorten and condense and offer some other alternatives to a four-year residential program, which is really extensive and time-consuming for students who are thinking of getting graduate degrees. For example, there's a couple of proposals about three-year programs, and there's also a lot of experimentation with online ed and how that fits in, and he could address those too at least.
Sure. Great questions. And I think in this economy, you're hearing around the country, and the University of Wisconsin system is very interested in this, of trying to shorten the amount of time that a student needs to invest in a college education. There's been some discussion at the level of the Board of Regents of three-year degrees, of allowing students to complete in a shorter window of time. And I think that is something that's obtainable. In fact, right now, students who come to our campuses and take courses during the summer over the winterim session, maybe have already obtained some credit at the high school level, can shorten their window. And I think this is worth exploring, but we don't want to do it at the expense of removing the liberal arts component of the education of the degree. I think we need to do it carefully, but it is something that we know citizens in the state and around the country are very interested in. We're also experimenting with online and other types of delivery modes. One of the ones that we're starting to implement here at UW-Baraboosaw County is a hybrid fast-track course option where students who are going part-time can complete what would ordinarily be a full semester, 16 or 15-week course in 8 weeks by spending part of that time online. There's still a face-to-face component. I think these are all opportunities that allow more people to access college and will ultimately benefit the state, benefit the country by allowing more people to come to college and graduate with a four-year degree or with a baccalaureate degree, I should say. But we need to do it in such a way that still maintains the quality and the rigor that's expected when one graduates with that credential.
Cynthia, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. And some people are calling for the discrediting of a bachelor's degree as a credential for a job, since it does not signify the acquisition of a liberal education. What's your reaction to the BA as becoming meaningless?
Well, I think that's the reason we see this LEAP initiative, is there are some institutions around the country that are removing some of the general liberal arts education requirement to the four-year baccalaureate degree. And I think that those of us that are in higher ed that are familiar with that model and embrace the importance of a liberal education don't want to see that. We want to make certain that any student coming out with a bachelor's degree has those liberal arts skills. And within the context of the University of Wisconsin system, the first 2 years, regardless of what major a student is interested in, is going to be focused on a liberal education and the liberal arts, that broad curriculum. I think that's very important. It's something I hear from employers that they want. What they really want are students that come out with a college degree that have the kind of skills for learning that make them successful in interacting with different groups of people, problem-solving, communication skills, and that are adaptable. And that's what this type of education is about. It's an education that requires a certain amount of time, a commitment of a student to go through that curriculum, but it's one that provides a superior output in terms of the end product of someone who comes out with a degree that is grounded in the liberal arts foundation.
Our guest is Tom Plager, who is the Dean and Campus Executive Officer and Associate Professor of Anthropology and Archaeology at the UW-Baraboosaw County. Erica Janik is our on-air producer today. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking today about the value of a liberal education with Tom Plager, who's the Dean and Campus Executive Officer at the UW-Baraboosaw County. If you'd like to join the conversation, the lines are full at the moment. The call-in number is 800-642-1234, and of course you can always email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's go back to the phones, Tom, with Gina in Neenah. Hi, Gina.
Yes, hi, Dr. Plager. I'm sitting in the parking lot at UW Fox Valley, and I know a big chunk of your heart still belongs here.
I spent about 8 or 9 years there. It's a great campus.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to chime in and tell you what liberal arts education and degrees have done for our family. My husband did a 3-2 program when he got out of high school, starting out at Beloit College and earning a degree there before getting his mechanical engineering degree at Madison. And that's really taken him places because he can write. and there aren't a lot of other people that he works with on a day-to-day basis who can put together ideas and make presentations and things, and a lot of his peers do turn to him for that kind of help. And also he jokes, too, that with all the cutbacks, there's not a lot of support staff who can kind of do the editing and proofing that used to get done. And then secondly, for me, I've actually got a poli-sci degree from UW-Madison and always fancied myself a writer and a debater. And that has worked so well for our family because I got out and started working in public relations and advertising and have done the agency thing, the corporate thing, and then I did the mommy thing. And I'm able to use my skills on a part-time basis, even right here at UW-Fox, just because I felt like I went to school for a career, not a job.
Well, I really appreciate those comments. It's great to hear. And these are the types of comments that I hear over and over again from successful graduates, whether it's coming out of the University of Wisconsin system or other liberal arts tracks, or at least institutions that have the first 2 years as liberal arts education. I would agree with everything that you're saying. And in my own experience, I have an undergraduate in political science, a master of arts in anthropology, a doctorate in anthropology and archaeology, and I've been a research archaeologist, a professor, and now a college administrator, and I often tell parents and students that the most important skills that I use every day came from the first 2 years of those liberal arts courses, communication skills, analytical skills, and they have stuck with me regardless of what discipline or what job I'm doing. And I would agree that the type of education we're talking about is one that helps prepare people for lifelong careers and also makes them very adaptable to change careers if necessary. So great comments. I appreciate you calling in.
Okay. Have a good holiday.
Gina, thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And let's go next to Muscaday and to Carol. Hello, Carol. What's on your mind?
Thanks. I'm wondering how you confront the whole issue of corporate influence and control of our universities as of our government. I'm just reading Chris Hedges' new book, Empire of Illusion, and it's so powerful. But he does go a lot into what has happened with liberal arts since 1970 in this country, which have been largely decimated in departments, particularly their as a component of the Ivies and the powerful schools that produce, you know, the ruling class, the top 1% who own 99% of the country's wealth. And it's all well and good to talk about how liberal arts is great for critical thinking, but corporations don't want critical thinking. They want business majors, and they want people who don't think for their agendas. And so how do you get the students to understand this and to know the risks that they're taking and in terms of jobs and careers and so on, when they're not, that isn't what they want. They want to make money, they want to get out there, and they want to have a fair playing field with, you know, the competition that's there.
Well, interesting question. You bring up a couple of points, and let me try to address at least some of them. I think that you are correct that there is some misunderstanding on behalf of the public, and in the case of corporations, perhaps, and businesses, of not completely understanding what it is, what a liberal education is about. You mentioned you made the comment that corporations and businesses don't want critical thinking. That's really the opposite of what I hear from employers. I often hear that one of the disappointments employers have is that they get someone in with a specific major where they may be able to accomplish or perform in that certain area, but they're missing sometimes the other areas that make an employee very productive. So I would disagree with the idea that businesses and corporations and the government aren't interested in the types of skills that a liberal education develops. I think that's the opposite. I often hear from employers that hire very technical employees that they're sometimes missing in those areas. I do think that in the case of this LEAP initiative, that it is somewhat of a reaction to some of the things that you're talking about, that we need to do a better job as educators of promoting what a liberal education is about and what it will accomplish. And we try to be very candid with students and make them understand that they do need to think about what the earning power is of an end degree, but that should not be the sole focus of why someone comes to college. There's a big difference in my mind between education and training. Education is producing someone who knows how to learn regardless of what environment they're in, versus training is focusing on very specific tasks. And the two sometimes obviously combine, but I think what we are trying to do in the case of our institution and within the UW system is really develop people to their fullest potential. And this part of their curriculum, the liberal arts experience, is something that will allow them to go much further than someone that has not been exposed to it.
Thank you.
All right, Carol, thank you very much for the call. The number for you is 1-800-642-1234 as we talk about the value of a liberal education with Tom Plager, the Dean and Campus Executive Officer at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County. Let's go next to Tanya in Florence. And Tanya, what is on your mind today? You'll have to turn the radio down.
Tanya, what is on your mind today?
Hi. Turn it down. Okay.
Yeah, turn it down.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Tanya, and I work full-time at a bank. I've worked there for 20 years, and I just finished my first two courses at UW-Marinette online, and I'm really excited to start this journey toward my liberal arts degree. I'm doing it for me, and my daughter is going to be graduating from Madison in the spring, and I'm actually driving on my way to pick her up to bring her home for Christmas break. So we're students together.
Well, that's exciting, Tanya. Congratulations on starting your educational experience up at one of our sister campuses, University of Wisconsin-Marinette. And I think that's one of the other exciting things about a liberal education is it generates enthusiasm and curiosity and excitement for learning. And that is perhaps one of the most powerful aspects of this type of education, is that it inspires people to learn and makes lifelong learning something that people embrace and look forward to the rest of their lives. So congratulations and good luck.
Tom, what advice do you offer a high school or returning adult as he or she considers what type of college to attend and perhaps what to pursue?
Well, I get asked this question a lot from friends and colleagues, family members that know I'm in the higher education business, so to speak, and I'm often asked what kind of major or where should I send my son or daughter. And there are a few things, bits of advice I give. One, for a parent, you need to, or someone, a counselor thinking about where a student should go, there's some questions that I think anyone should ask who's a consumer of higher education. Is what is the quality of the faculty? What are the size of the classes? What type of curriculum is present? Is this a program that matches the student's intellectual capability and curiosity? And is there an opportunity for the student to get involved? I think that is perhaps one of the most important questions is, are the faculty, the staff accessible? Will the student get to interact with them on a regular basis? And I often tell people that in terms of a major, a field of study, that a liberal arts experience is something that really will allow someone to be much more adaptable in an economy where we don't know where the hot demand jobs are in the future. I think that's one thing that parents and guidance counselors try to do is predict what will be the best or the most highly sought after jobs or majors 10 years out, 5 years out. And someone who has had that liberal arts experience is in a position that they can easily change careers and jobs much more so than someone that is locked into a specific training or technical education.
Let's go to Luck next with Nick. Nick, hi.
Yeah, hello. I was just curious listening to your guest there, and I'm wondering about high school students coming into these liberal arts programs. And I realize this might be a very large question to answer, but do you feel as though that this sort of geared emphasis towards students with liberal arts education might have a little bit more to do with, so I for lack of a better way to put it, maybe a more of a watering down of a high school education? It seems to me that I may be very fortunate, but having been a product of a private school, that my experience in college was, and having a liberal arts education now, that I had tremendous difficulty, and I think the professors and assistant professors did as well, of having kids catch up to a lot of these things in liberal arts, classics, literature, history, philosophy, that possibly they may should have maybe at least got some of it in high school, and therefore they had a difficult time in college and pursued those liberal arts educations. And I'll be short here quick. I do know of other students that are now going to engineering schools, and these engineering schools are now completely switching over in their gearing towards more liberal arts oriented educations. It's almost as though a lot of the students maybe are having trouble in orientating themselves from high school to the college level education.
Good question and comments. We're at our campus here, we're right on the front line since we're in the freshman sophomore business, so to speak. And I would say that there is a generalization. Students come to college perhaps having been successful in an environment where they're required to memorize respond on exams, where they're learning the subject matter but not engaging fully those critical thinking skills. And I think the more of that we can do in this connection between high school and college, and realizing that many college programs, particularly those that focus on the liberal arts, are not so much about memorization of material, but are about learning how to learn and really engaging the subject matter in terms of discussion, in terms of analysis. And the more of those types of skills that can be taught at the high school level, I think the more successful we'll see students coming in to college and excelling in college. So I would agree that there's some need to better connect higher ed expectations with K-12 education in the area of a liberal education and the types of skills that we're trying to develop at the college level.
Nick, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. One of the great educational challenges has become this effort to strengthen the teaching of what is known as the STEM discipline, science, technology, engineering, and math. And at the same time, the humanities have experienced a significant decline. Do institutions or their students have to make a choice between humanities and science?
I don't think so. And they don't have to make that choice, particularly if they're at an institution that requires this broad liberal arts experience during the first 60 credits, so to speak. If you think about most majors or most college degrees are 120 to 130 credits, if we're talking about a standard three-credit class over 4 years, over half of the educational experience within the University of Wisconsin system is general education or really a liberal education, and only a quarter is in the major. So someone who's interested in engineering or interested in mathematics or the natural sciences really needs to realize that they're going to, or they should, be expected to explore these other areas that are very important to their educational experience. And I think it produces a better graduate, an engineer who has an appreciation for the humanities, understanding of the arts, an understanding of cultures that are different than one's own, who has good communication skills in terms of oral and written, is going to succeed at a level beyond someone who doesn't have those skills. So I think what you have to think about is the liberal arts experience is the foundation to which these majors can be applied onto it at the junior-senior level.
Tom Plager is our guest, Dean Campus Executive Officer at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County, and we go to Andrew in Milwaukee next. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. Question is about perspective. One of the strengths of a liberal arts education is that it provides not just the ability to think critically, but a context in which to think critically, a set of ideas you bring to the table that allow you to assess a given situation and come up with a solution, as you were saying. My question is, how does the LEAP program or the University of Baraboo address the question of perspective? Does it have a specific perspective that it's trying to produce, or is it really based on the professors? And how is it across the University of Wisconsin system?
That's a great question, and I will answer this from the perspective of my own campus and my own institution at UW-Baraboo Sauk County. We have this associate degree that is designed by the faculty of the UW colleges, which are the 13 two-year
liberal arts campuses of the University of Wisconsin system, designed to satisfy the requirements of the general education, the liberal arts education at all of the University of Wisconsin system campuses. So our students are primarily transfer students after 2 years on to baccalaureate degrees. And if you look at the general education or liberal arts education requirements around the system, courses have degree designators attached to them: natural science, social science, ethnic studies, international studies, and they vary from institution to institution, but there's an agreed upon combination of those degree designators that lead to a liberally educated person, that they're going to have the depth and content that one would expect of being a college-educated person, but also develop these types of skills that we've been talking about. So this is something that faculties at all higher ed spend a great deal of time talking about and discussing, is what is the end product, what do we want our students to be able to do when they leave here, and the collection of courses that are put together to make up the liberal arts curriculum have these specific skills and the content in mind, so that, as you mentioned, professors in the classroom have something to do with it, obviously, but this combination, this broad experience has been deliberately put together so that a student comes out with a minimal a series of skills and a minimal amount of content, that, when I say minimum, at least an agreed upon amount, that all have in common.
Andrew, thank you so much for your call. We do appreciate hearing from you. And Darren is next in Eau Claire. Hello, Darren.
Hi, how are you today?
Very good, thank you.
I have more of a comment than a question. Basically, I have a liberal arts degree from the university system in criminal justice, and my emphasis was in law enforcement. And while I was there at school, I kept questioning myself, why am I having, you know, why am I taking some of these classes that aren't preparing me for the actual job for police officer? Although I still feel that my degree didn't necessarily prepare me for the meanness of the streets of working as a police officer. One of the surprising things after 20 years is being a police officer is the ability to communicate with people, the ability to think. Most of my professors were not law enforcement officers. They were doctor types with a very limited experience in the law enforcement field. And being now an instructor, I've been able to instruct, fortunately, all over the world. And whenever I have students in front of me, I tell them not to discredit the need to be able to communicate, the need to be able to write properly to more or less cover yourself for the things that you have to do out on the street. Because without being able to communicate and write a proper report, what you've done on the street may look, if you can't write a proper report, it can make it seem like you did something improperly, or I don't know if you follow what I'm saying.
But I do, and I appreciate your comments. I think they're very important, and again, reflect the importance of education combined with training, that in order to accomplish one's training, at least I'm sort of paraphrasing what you're saying here, that you need to be a well-rounded, educated person to be successful and know more than just the nuts and bolts of the training to accomplish the job. Is that fair to say?
Right. I would like to see more of a blend, if it could be, in the 4-year degree teaching in the technical school. Obviously, they concentrate more on the training aspect and less on the communication and report writing. I'd like to see a better blend so that when the people come out of their education, that they have a better knowledge of what it's going to be like to not only handle the day-to-day aspects of law enforcement, but also to be able to communicate and write clear and concise reports and think, so that they can do their job properly and safely.
Well, thank you for your comments. I appreciate them, and I agree. I think as educators, we need to do more and do what you are doing, is explain to students that beyond the courses in your particular field of study, that this collection of courses is extremely important to your development as a student, and that's something we're trying to do across the UW system, but in particular, we have some initiatives here on campus where we're trying to do exactly that, of explain to students so that they really understand why they're they're taking these this collection of courses in relation to what it is they want to end up studying and getting a degree in. So I think that's very important. Thank you for your comments on the call.
Thank you, Darren. We do appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Barbara in Green Bay next. Hello, Barbara.
Hello. I had a comment about, I'm in favor of liberal education, but to some degree, you graduate with a liberal degree, you don't really have any job skills. So then you have to go back, on to graduate school. And it just seems like, you're in school forever and you end up with lots of loans, or, you could try to get grants, but it's, kind of difficult. And I just feel that if you're in a career where you're actually working, like in engineering, sometimes they have funding from companies, for advanced degrees in engineering. Well, at least the person gets out of school, they're not in debt, up to their eyeballs. And I just kind of think, I think that the liberal education is great, but you have to have a common sense that you have to, someday you're going to have to earn money and, and pay the bills.
I appreciate your comments. Let me just clarify a little bit here. When we're talking about liberal education in the context of it being part of a four-year degree, we're talking about the first 2 years of this general education that if you were an engineer, you would be required to take. There are liberal arts disciplines, and you mentioned that students can come out with a liberal arts discipline degree. They tend to be in the humanities, the social sciences, the sciences. And I think my comment is there obviously is some truth to what you're saying, that it is possible for a student to get a degree in a liberal arts field and not find immediate employment in that major. My own case is a good example. I have a degree in political science, where it's difficult to go out to a small community and say, well, they need a political scientist here and open up shop, so to speak. But what I think is important to understand is that those degrees, students need to realize they may not be looking for a job specific to their major, to their course field of study, that they are maybe attractive to an employer who's looking for management skills, leadership skills, the types of skills that we've talked about that are attractive to employers. And you need to, as a student, I think, take some ownership in your education and understand what is the marketability of your end degree. But I think students and the public need to realize that there are some degree programs where it may not be that a student gets a job in that particular major. English is another one where employers hire English majors, a good liberal arts major, regularly. That they want writers, catalog writers, journalists. You see a whole variety of things that English majors end up doing that isn't specifically in the field of English, so to speak, but they have excellent writing skills. So I think those are things that are important to consider, but there is a realization that students may not choose a degree major that is something that they would end up getting a job specifically in.
Barbara, thanks for the call. That'll wrap things up for us. We've been talking with Tom Plager, the Dean and Campus Executive Officer and Associate Professor of Anthropology and Archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County. We appreciate your knowledge and your interest and look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you very much, Jim, and appreciate the callers today. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Coming up in a minute or so, Paul Kinzer has our eyes to the skies, and we'll talk about that with him here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about recreational astronomy. Paul Kinzer of Galesville, Wisconsin, is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's published by Cambridge University Press. Paul is an amateur astronomer. He owns a business called Seeing Stars. He also blogs at cambridgeblog.org. And Paul, it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio today.
Oh, glad to be here.
I also went to your website and found a wonderful picture that you've taken in the last, 24 hours or so?
Well, I took the picture a while ago, but it was just chosen as the amateur astronomy picture of the day late last night. So I like the coincidence of that.
It's a picture of Venus emerging from behind the waning crescent moon.
Yeah, I took it early in the morning on Earth Day this year. It just happened that Venus was at a place in its orbit. Earth and the moon were where they were, and the moon covered Venus went in front of it, and as it moved across the sky, Venus emerged shortly after sunrise, and I snapped a picture through my telescope.
2009 is the 400th anniversary of Galileo's making and using a telescope to study the night sky for the first time. The United Nations and the International Astronomical Union designated the year as the International Year of Astronomy to commemorate Galileo's work, and I take it that activities to promote this still go on.
Oh, yes. There's something going on all the time right up until the end of the year, and some of the things that were started this year will continue going on. It's really been, I think, a very successful thing to introduce people to astronomy, to actually, one of the big goals was to actually get people to look through telescopes, and I've done my best to help people do that.
Now, one of those projects of the International Year of Astronomy is the Galileo Scope, inexpensive telescope kit that could be used by many people throughout the world to get an idea of what Galileo saw. I know that they were marketed by a Wisconsin company, and they were having some difficulty meeting their shipping deadlines, but what do you see now from your vantage point?
Well, the shipping still does take a while. I think a lot of it has to do with the economy just took a nosedive right when this project was in the works. However, well over 100,000 people have gotten their scopes. I got mine, and it is a really nice thing for folks who've never, ever looked through a telescope, especially for $20.
Is it difficult to put together for $20?
I would say no, not at all. And in fact, last time I was on, I talked about it, and I wrote an email to the Galileo Scope folks, and I did a review on a website called cloudynights.com, and I heard from the company here in Wisconsin, and they said they had already updated the instructions for assembling it, and that those instructions would, as soon as they could, be going out with the scopes. And they also updated their online instructions for helping with assembly. If you use the line that are the online instructions, it's very easy.
So go to galileoscope.org, galileoscope.org, and get more information. And if you'd like to order one, well, you can do it right there.
Yeah.
If you'd like to join the conversation with Paul Kinzer about astronomy, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. Email address, of course, is talk@wpr.org. One reason that you wrote Stargazing Basics, which came out earlier this year, correct?
It actually came out late last year.
Late last year. Was to help people figure out how to buy telescopes and other astronomy equipment. And I understand that you would prefer that people use a scope rather than binoculars to get started, or is it the other way around?
The other way around. My own experience in introducing people to astronomy, I lived in Minneapolis for a while, and I would take my telescopes out when there was something interesting in the sky and go to one of the parks. And one of the first questions people always had was, what should I buy when I buy a telescope? And the more I thought about it and the more I talked to people, the more I came to the conclusion, I don't think you should buy a telescope right away, especially if you're absolutely new. There's a lot to know. I spend many pages in the book talking about three different kinds of telescopes that are most appropriate for beginners. And then in addition to that, there are all sorts of accessories, eyepieces, finder scopes, just as important as the telescope is the mount it's on. It's pretty complicated, and it's fairly expensive to get a decent one. And then even after you have it, it takes a while and practice to get to use it well. And if you're not really sure this is what you want to do, all of that learning can be somewhat frustrating. So for people who look up at the sky and they think, wow, this is really something, or they see a special on television, or they look through a telescope, I suggest starting with your naked eye or possibly a pair of binoculars. And that way, once you've maybe learned your way around the sky a bit, once you've figured out what are the different kinds of things that I'm interested in that I'd like to see, that'll really help you decide, well, how big a telescope do I want to get? What kind of telescope? How much do I want to spend? All of those things, I think your decisions about them will be much easier to make and much more informed if you don't start with a telescope right away.
Let's take some phone calls, and we've got a couple lines open for you at 800-642-1234. Jeff's in Arena. Jeff, what can we do for you?
Hi. Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about anomalous, I don't know, structures on the moon and Mars that are shown in NASA photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering if you're aware of some of those structures, especially the thing that really kind of put it over the edge is not hokey was the pictures of the glass tunnels on Mars.
I'm
aware of any of those photos.
I am not aware of glass tunnels on Mars. I know that they found a very deep hole in the sides of one of the volcanoes on Mars that they think might be a collapsed lava tube. But to me, the word structure sort of implies that someone made it. And there is no evidence at all that I'm aware of that I would consider acceptable of anything being made by any creatures on either the moon or Mars.
Well, I'm looking at the photo right now, and it's image M140-1512.
Hmm.
I think at first were said by NASA when they had really a faraway shot of these things. Like, oh, there's sand dunes.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did is they had the orbiter or whatever it was take a closer photograph of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're shiny. They have regular support structures, and where two of the tunnels, or one of the tunnels splits into two, these rib structures are interlocking. So if you haven't seen some of these photos, I think, you know, I hear all this stuff about astronomy on public radio, and I haven't heard boo about any of this stuff. Trust me, I'm not some USO or UFO nut job,
mm-hmm.
But it's kind of hard to miss on this one. Anyway, Richard Hoagland has a book called The Monuments of Mars.
Yeah, and I do know who Richard Hoagland is. He's also someone who has some very, very controversial opinions about NASA and the moon. And I'll just say right away that I am not a supporter of what Richard Hoagland has to say. His evidence has been, ridiculed by the scientific community.
Well, I'm sure it has. Trust me, I'm skeptical as you are, but it's kind of hard to discount some of these photos, especially on the moon as well.
Right.
So anyway, I would say look at those photos.
Well, I have seen some of the photos of the moon and some of these, it's interesting to me that many of the people who claim that there are civilizations that have visited the moon and Mars and other places, they accuse NASA of doctoring photos. And I don't want to get into a big debate here, but the only photos that have been shown to have been doctored are the photos that these people are putting up.
Right.
So,
well, I've never heard that, but
Jeff,
I don't believe in UFOs either.
Thank you very much, though, for the call. We do appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Gerard in Cedarburg next. Hello, Gerard.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
My question is basically, you know, as a general person interested in astronomy, we see these beautiful photos that show distant galaxies. And could you just give a quick explanation as to, I'm understanding that these only come as a result of like a time-lapsed image as the scope is in synchrony with the Earth's rotation. And how long ago, you know, as we kind of talked about Galileo and other people from the distant past, when did they actually have an appreciation that they had to do that, you know, this sort of synchronized thing in order to produce these beautiful, you know, photos of these very distant places?
Well, my own, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but it's been about 100 years to 120 years that astrophotography has been around. And the main reason for that is they had very good telescopes then, but they did not have very good film techniques. Film was something that even to get a daylight exposure, you needed to expose it for some time. So they are time-lapse photos. Many amateurs, including me, are now taking very nice photos of galaxies and star clusters and other deep sky objects that the eye, you just can't see. if you had a huge telescope, say one of the telescopes on the mountaintops in Hawaii, looking through an eyepiece, you'd see a lot of detail. But those are made for taking photographs. And that's one of the things I was talking about. If you're going to study things in the sky and you want your telescope aimed at a particular object for more than a minute or so, you need a motorized mount, because as the Earth turns, objects in your eyepiece view will seem to move, and the more you magnify them, the quicker they'll move. And so a motorized mount will hold them still, and if you're guiding, and that means following it very, very carefully, and you open up your camera's shutter, until a few years ago, you would be exposing film, but now even amateurs are using digital camera techniques. You let light fall on the sensor. And the longer it falls, the more detail you're going to see, the dimmer the things are going to be that show up. And I know of a particular photo that was taken in 1892. And the reason I know this photo is because a couple of years ago, there was a Comet Holmes, that suddenly burst into view. And it hadn't been seen since 1892 when it burst into view. And it was noticed in a photograph of the Andromeda Galaxy, one of the first decent photographs of a galaxy.
Paul Kinzer is our guest. We're going to take more of your calls after we check the latest news. Our guest, Paul Kinzer, is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.